Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the Harbor Group's special conference call on fixed income. I'm Robin Gullison, the lead strategist of the Harbor Group. I'm very happy to be joined today by Mikhail Pacek. He's a fixed income portfolio strategist at RBC Dominion Securities, and he advises the firm's investment advisors across the country on all aspects of their fixed income investments. The call is going to last approximately 15 to 20 minutes. Some of the topics we're going to cover today include a current overview of the fixed income market and recent events taking place in the market, a look at the high yield bond market, and what's happened in the preferred share market. You know, the preferred share market has been a serious disappointment to all of us involved in it, and it's something we want to make sure we can provide a lot of clarity on for you, so we're going to spend a lot of time talking about preferred shares today. With that, I'll jump right into the overview. So if you turn to page 2 on the presentation, there's a presentation on our website you can go through along with us. On page 2, we show an overview of the playing field, simply showing what yields on different securities in Canada look like. And there's a bunch of lines in the chart. The lowest line in that chart is Government of Canada bond yield. You can see that all the way up to 10 years, Government of Canada bond yields don't exceed 1.5%. The next line up is provincial bond yields. They top out at about 2% in 10 years. And the top two lines are GICs and investment-grade corporate bonds. And you can see even there, you've got to go up to 10 years to get a yield over 3%. If you think back to a few years ago, you know, in 2007, 2008, cash was yielding 3 to 4%. So there's been a big, big change in the government bond market, and that's dragged down almost all yields. One notable exception, if you look on the right-hand side with the arrow, is reset preferred shares. Banks have been issuing rate reset preferred shares at yields of 5.5%, and that's actually off the chart on here. So we're going to go into more detail on what's happening there further on in the call. But suffice it to say that government and bonds are a return of capital proposition. History shows that forward returns are overwhelmingly determined by the yield you initially purchase at. So we don't see a lot of total return out of the government bond market over the next few years here. A couple of the interesting developments we've seen is an increase in value, particularly in the corporate bond market. And it's also interesting that GICs continue to provide pretty good value. And we'll talk more about GICs in the next page. And on page three of the presentation, we compare short-term yields for GICs and the Government of Canada, and you can see here the GIC yields are markedly higher than Government of Canada yields. And this is even though that GICs, if they're under 100,000 in principal and interest, are guaranteed by the Canadian Deposit Insurance Corporation, which is guaranteed by the Government of Canada. So for balances under 100,000, GICs are the same credit risk as the Government of Canada. Now, the one difference between GICs and bonds, of course, is GICs don't have any liquidity. They are locked in for the term. But that doesn't seem like enough to explain this yield differential. Mikhail, can you go into a bit of a detail on why GIC yields are so much higher than government bonds?
Sure, definitely, Robin. First, before I get into that, I just wanted to say a quick thank you for the invitation here to come speak with yourself and all your clients on the call today. So with respect to GIC rates and why the yields there are so substantial relative to what you're seeing in the bond market, essentially the reason banks are doing that is they're incented to pay GIC investors a higher rate because the banks themselves receive favorable regulatory treatment on GICs. The reason for this is that GICs are perceived to be a more stable long-term funding source than some of the other channels through which the bank raises money, such as money market instruments or short-term bonds. And as a result of that, banks are willing to pay a premium to lock in GIC capital.
Great. Thanks a lot, Mikhail. Shifting gears to page 4, we're going to talk a little bit about the corporate bond market. And the chart on page 4 simply shows the corporate bond yield spread. So spreads is another way of saying the relative yield premium you receive for owning corporate debt versus government debt. You can see that in the past year and year-to-date in particular, you've seen these spreads or relative yields on corporate bonds go up by quite a bit. This has been particularly acute in the energy sector and in the subordinated bank sector, and we're actually seeing some short-term corporate bonds now exceed GIC yields, which we haven't seen in some time. So given our outlook for a lower-than-average chance of recession, it looks like corporate debt might be pretty interesting because the relative yields have increased a lot more than maybe the fundamentals would warrant. Mikhail, what are you hearing on the trading floor about corporate bonds? Are you seeing people looking at value starting to step in here?
Yeah, we're definitely seeing some renewed renewed interest as well as increased interest from investors who've already been invested in this space as a result of these valuations, which are now, as you mentioned, getting a lot more compelling. If you look at sort of the incremental yield you receive to own a corporate bond versus a government bond, depending which issuer you look at or which segment of the market you're looking at, you're kind of getting the largest yield advantage to go from a government to a corporate that you've received in sort of 4 to 7 years. And if you look at the individual name basis, you'll see there's a lot of circumstances where you're getting yields that are 1 to 2% higher this year to lend the same company money than you would have got last year. And that's occurred despite the fact that in many parts of the yield curve, government bond yields are actually lower. So that's caused kind of substantial interest in corporate bonds recently. We've seen a lot of interest in new issues that have come to the market as the yields have been just much higher than we've seen recently. And in fact, even in some corners of the markets, we're seeing traditional equity investors starting to look to corporate bonds because the opportunity set has become so compelling.
That's great. Thank you very much, Mikhail. We also note here on page 5 that we have seen the spreads or the relative yields on corporate bonds increase quite a bit, but it looks like the tide is turning. Page 5 is another measure of credit spreads, and this time it's for the high-yield bond market, and we've seen those start to come in quite materially. You know, just a few weeks ago, we had a lot of recession fears in the market. A lot of people were worried the U.S. was going to go into recession. That seems to be abating a bit. Our own view is that the chance of recession in the U.S. this year is maybe a little more than the baseline. If the baseline is 20%, maybe a little bit higher than that. But you're at a point where high-yield bonds were pricing in nearly a 100% chance of a recession. So, Mikhail, what's caused this sudden shift in investor attitude towards corporate bonds?
Well, sure. I mean, there's been a big change in the last number of months, I think, in some of the actions we've seen management teams start to take. We've started to kind of see a de-emphasizing of some of the shareholder-friendly initiatives that we saw for the last number of years, and we're starting to see management teams place a much greater focus on improving their balance sheets at the various companies we look at. You know, examples of this type of behavior that we've seen recently would include actions such as equity issuance. We've seen a number of companies complete asset sales where they've actually taken the proceeds from those asset sales and used it to repay debt. And we've also seen a number of companies, in particular the resource sector, where we've seen a lot of CapEx reductions where companies have then taken those cost savings and essentially deployed them to also reduce debt. So we're seeing the balance sheet is really coming back in focus, and that's something that is always going to be cheered by bondholders.
So we've seen economic fundamentals improve, and we've also seen companies acting to improve their own fundamentals from a bondholder perspective.
Absolutely.
That's great. Thank you. On page 6, looking quickly at the Bank of Canada, the chart on page 6 shows the probability of a rate cut by the Bank of Canada by July of this year. So when the line on that chart is above 1, that tells you the market is fully pricing in a rate cut and then some, and the lower it is, the lower the chance of a rate cut priced in. As you can see there, on late January, you hit over 100% chance of the Bank of Canada cutting rates by July. That's because the Bank of Canada meeting was that day, and market participants overwhelmingly expected the Bank of Canada to cut rates. They, of course, did not cut rates. They chose to wait to see what the stimulus looks like from Ottawa, and in the meantime, we've seen oil prices bounce as well, so that's helped. And right now, the market's pricing in about a one-third chance of a rate cut by July, and I think a lot will be determined by what happens as far as the federal budget goes, what happens to the oil price. Mikhail, what is RBC's forecast for the Bank of Canada this year?
So RBC's current expectation is that the Bank of Canada will keep rates on hold and the overnight rate will remain at 50 basis points through the end of the year. And as you mentioned, that compares to market expectations of around a 30% chance that the Bank of Canada is actually going to go ahead and cut rates one time. So in order, you know, what is the risk, I guess, to RBC's forecast and what we need to see change for the Bank of Canada to actually go ahead and cut interest rates? We kind of think there's three major events that would bring talk of another rate cut back onto the table. The first challenge that could potentially pop up that would cause the Bank of Canada to consider a rate cut would be if we saw a recession in the U.S. You mentioned in the last topic we just discussed that that's not something that's our base case expectation, but that's certainly a risk that if that changed, we would potentially see looser monetary policy in Canada. The second risk is that if oil prices retest the lows that we saw touch a month or so ago in the mid-20s and stay there for a sustained period of time, that is something the Bank of Canada themselves have identified as a risk to the economy and something that could potentially prompt more easing from the bank. The third risk that we see would be if, you know, we see an underwhelming amount of fiscal stimulus announced in the next couple of weeks from the newly elected federal government. There's a pretty healthy program that's been promised. The Bank of Canada itself has kind of looked to this and mentioned it in past commentaries, suggesting that's a potential source of potential boost to economic growth. So for the time being, the bank seems content to wait on the sidelines, but those would be the three risks that could potentially tip the scales.
Great. Thanks a lot, Mikhail. On page 7, we've got a chart of Canadian 5-year bond yields, and you can see here that these yields did indeed plummet in January, February, as oil prices tested their lows. They've since bounced back quite a bit, but again, still a meager 0.66% on a 5-year Canada bond yield. You can get a 1-year GIC at well over 1%, and of course, the Bank of Canada has a pretty good track record of maintaining inflation in the 2% range. So, Mikhail, who's buying Government of Canada bonds at a 0.66% yield when inflation is projected to be 2% over the long term?
Well, I mean, from our vantage point, that's certainly something that we do spend some time scratching our heads at, too. But in our belief, it looks like it's investors essentially who have regulatory constraints that force them to be invested in government bonds, or investors who have investment policy statement constraints that force them to be invested in government bonds. And, you know, if you're thinking about what type of institutions would that include, banks, insurance companies, pension funds, all of these folks are mandated to hold government bonds. And, you know, from our vantage point, we look and we think there's a lot better options out there for clients who are unencumbered by those types of constraints. And we think there's a lot better options out there for you to look at to achieve your financial goals.
So this isn't something you're recommending to individual investors looking to preserve capital. There's better options such as GICs.
Unless someone had an extreme liquidity need or really just wanted to be invested in the absolute safest product out there and wasn't really a yield investor, then no, it's not something that's at the top of our list of recommendations right now.
Great. Thank you very much. We're going to shift gears a bit to the high-yield bond market. This is something that's been quite volatile this year. It has yet another thing that's had a high correlation with oil. Mikhail, can you walk us through what's happened in the high-yield bond market, particularly the past 2 years, and we've seen volatility really pick up?
Sure. So, I mean, in the last 2 years, you've essentially seen the yield in the high-yield bond market double. It was around 5% in the first part of 2014. It's currently, it actually touched above 10% in mid-February. So, very substantial move there. And what seems like it's happened is kind of the challenges that have impacted the resource sector have started to cascade across the market and impact other sectors. So if you take a look back, I mean, we've seen a tremendous amount of growth in the energy sector in the last decade or so, and much of it was financed by debt. The amount of high-yield energy debt outstanding has increased fourfold since 2008. And as these companies borrowed money to undertake, you know, basically projects where the economics made sense at much higher energy prices or much higher commodity prices, as we've seen commodity prices turn lower in recent years, a number of these bonds have come under pressure. As we've seen some losses mount in these energy bonds and these commodity bonds, we've seen investors start to pull money from the fund, from high yield funds as returns have underwhelmed. And as a result of that, we've seen the selling from fund managers taking outflows kind of just cascade across the broader market.
And your outlook from going forward on high yield bonds, it looks like the yields are quite compelling. Are they compensating for the risk that's out there?
Yeah, I mean, that's, I think, a great way to frame the question. And when we look at the market right now, we think the sell-off's gotten to a point where it's just gone too far. If you look at sort of valuations, as I mentioned, in mid-February, the index touched a yield above 10%. That's the highest yield you've seen in the high-yield bond market since 2009. And for context on just how substantial a double-digit yield is, the 12-month default rate has peaked at 10% in each of the last two recessions. So we believe that essentially at this level, we're getting recession-level prices at a time where, in our view, you know, recession risk is fairly muted. So in addition to that kind of very compelling absolute value I just spoke about, we think the relative value also is quite compelling and speaks for why investors should be looking at this space right now. If you compare the yield on high yield bonds right now to investment grade bonds, you're earning about 6 to 6.5% more yield to be in high yield versus investment grade. That compares very favorably to historical average in the mid 3 to 4% area. So we think that also augurs well for the high yield bond market.
Great. Thank you very much, Mikhail. We're going to shift gears to the preferred share market now on page 9. And we understand the preferred share market has been very challenging for anybody involved in it. You know, these securities were purchased for accounts as a view to have something in the account that provides a good level of income and provides protection against higher interest rates. As we're all painfully aware, interest rates have plummeted to levels none of us would have thought, and the performance of preferred shares has been much, much worse than we would have expected. So the big question a lot of people may ask now is why even bother to stay involved with preferred shares? These have been highly volatile. They have not performed well. Why bother sticking with them? And I think the big answer we would have to that is value. If you look at the preferred share market and look where the yields are now, similar to the high yield market, this is something that is fully pricing in a very bad outcome, and yields are similar to where they were during the financial crisis. If you look at page 9, the dark line on that chart shows bank rate reset preferred shares, and it shows the relative yield compared to Government of Canada bonds they're being issued at. If you look back in 2008-2009, these are being issued at spreads of 4.5% higher than Government of Canada yields. Now back then, the Government of Canada yield was 2%, so these are getting issued at 6.5%. Today, Royal Bank just did an issue, I believe, at 4.8% over Government of Canada yield, but of course the Government of Canada yield, as we said before, is closer to 0.6-0.7%, so that came at a 5.5% yield. But if you look on the relative yield, which is where investors look at valuations for corporate securities, this is as bad as it was in the financial crisis. And that's the reason we think investors should stay involved, that there's a lot of value in this market. Mikhail, how does this compare to other parts of the bank capital structure? So are bank bonds trading at financial crisis-like levels or just the preferred shares?
You know, the preferred shares are kind of an outlier in this respect. I mean, if you look at the bonds, I mean, they're well off the narrowest spread levels we saw in kind of 2013, 2014, but they are you know, 1% to 2% at least lower than they were at in kind of 2008, 2009. So it's just kind of isolated to the preferred share part of the capital structure right now. When we kind of look at the bank from a high-level view.
And what's happening in other sectors? So we look at on page 10, we've got some charts of BCE's rate reset preferred share relative yields and Bell Canada long-term bonds. It looks like this is also happening in other sectors of the market?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, very similar to story to what you just described with the banks. I mean, if you look at a rate reset preferred share and compare it with a long-term bond issued by the same company, we've used Bell Canada in this presentation. Back in 2010, 2011, investors were giving up 2% of yield to own the rate reset preferred share instead of the corporate bond. And the reason they would have been compelled to do that was the fact that you get a dividend tax credit on your rate reset preferred share. And also you have interest rate protection in the sense that your dividend is going to reset higher if indeed interest rates move higher, where in the long-term bond, you're locked into that fixed coupon. As we all know, interest rates have gone lower since that point. But from a valuation perspective, the valuation is completely flipped around. At current prices, investors are actually now picking up 2% of yield to own a rate reset preferred share relative to owning a long-term bond from the same issuer. So very similar dynamic to what's taking place in the bank and taking place within the bank capital structures. And we think from a relative value perspective, it argues very much in favor of sticking with preferred shares at this point.
Great. Thank you very much, Mikhail. If we switch to page 11, I think the big question everybody on this call has is, what are the prospects for recovery on the rate reset preferred shares, and what do we need to see for the preferred share market to recover?
So there's kind of three things that we're looking for as far as signposts for a preferred share market recovery. The first thing we think we need to see is either a stabilization or ideally a move higher in the five-year bond yield. Rate resets account for two-thirds of the preferred share market, and if you look at the cash flow profile of these instruments, when interest rates move higher, the cash flow profile improves. So if we could see that sort of move in interest rates, we think that would be positive. Better performance in corporate bonds. What we mean by this is if credit spreads on corporate bonds either stay where they are or narrow, that's something that would be positive for preferred shares because it would suggest that reset spreads on new issue preferred shares might also come down. And the third thing we think we need to see is an improvement in the new issue market. Kind of a thorn in the side of the preferred share market for the last 18 months or so has been the fact that every time a new issue comes to market, it's carrying better terms than existing deals in the market, and that's weighing on the existing deals. So we think if we see an improvement in kind of those three things, that might be a necessary precondition to bring some new money into this market and potentially reverse the trend and lead to a recovery.
So, Mikhail, right now the banks are doing new issues at 5.5%. Let's say these 5.5% deals continue to trade well. What happens then if 5.5% becomes 5.25% for an issue, and potentially even lower than that? What's the prospect for the existing issues trading at deep discounts?
Well, I mean, that would be a very favorable development for the existing issues that are trading at deep discounts because investors are looking at those that offer maybe a 4% dividend and a reset spread in the mid-200s, and they're comparing it right now to a reset spread of 480 and a dividend of 5%, and there's a big gulf there, and that's why the existing issues are trading in the $15 to $17 range. If we could see the new issue level start to come down and migrate closer to those older deals that have lower dividends and lower reset spreads, we think that'd be very supportive of the price of the lower ones, and potentially you could see a pretty meaningful recovery in those issues.
And, you know, the main reason these are in a lot of people's accounts is for protection from higher interest rates. Of course, again, that obviously has not happened. But if we were to see higher interest rates, what does the performance profile look like for the new issues at the high dividends and the high reset spreads versus the discounted existing issues?
Sure. So, I mean, the new issues in that environment would not be adversely affected. I think they would still perform fairly well. But the fact is they're issued at $25 and they're callable 5 years from now at $25. So your prospect for a capital gain is confined to that five-year period. And 5 years forward, if everything goes well, you'll receive your $25 back. However, the existing issues that are out there with lower dividends that are trading in the $15 to $17 area, those issues would react very favorably to the type of to a move higher in interest rates or to the type of dynamic you mentioned in your previous question. And those issues, we think there's scope for a meaningful recovery, you know, into the low 20s, or even potentially they could come back to par. If you look back to the financial crisis, and you look at how some of the perpetuals back then, which traded down to $14, responded, those things migrated their way back to par as the market healed, and we started to see lower dividends on new issues.
So if we start to see lower dividends on new issues and bond yields start to trend up at the same time, that'd be a very powerful combination for these.
That would be pretty much the best outcome you could have for the preferred share market if those two things happen.
Great, thank you. And I guess one other thing we want to know, you know, are we starting to see these signs of a durable bottom? Is there anything else we want to see from a flow of funds perspective?
Sure. I mean, ultimately, I think for the market to bottom and start to turn up and recover here, we think the most important to see is signs that new money is actually coming into the market. And recently, we've started to see a few positive developments on this front. The first positive development that we think we've seen is now that we're getting these new issues, as you mentioned earlier, at 550 dividends and reset spreads above 4.5%, it seems like we've really reached maybe what could be referred to as a clearing price, or at the very least, a level where there's a substantial amount of interest in new issues. I mean, that's evidenced if you look at the deal sizes of the last six bank issues that came with a 550 dividend and a reset spread above 450, and you compare those deal sizes to what we saw in early 2015, the deal sizes in the most recent issues are double what they were in early 2015. So to us, that's a sign that there's a lot of demand for these deals, and it looks like the nature of some of that demand is coming from institutional sources, where these are investors that are doing the type of relative value analysis we talked about earlier, comparing corporate bonds to preferred shares, and reaching the conclusion that this is an attractive market to be in. The second positive sign that we've seen is the strong performance of some of these recent new issues. The first deals that came with spreads over 400 basis points came with spreads around 450 basis points. Those issues are still trading between 25 and a half and 25 and a quarter, even though we've seen subsequent new issues from banks with even higher reset spreads that in some cases have been pushing close to 500 basis points. We view that as a very positive sign that new money is starting to come into this market, and essentially investors are maintaining current positions and buying the new issues. And that's something that is a bit of a sea change from what we saw last year, where every time we would see a new issue come to the market with better terms than the existing deals, what would happen is investors would sell their existing deals and rotate into the newer one with better terms, and no net new money was flowing in. So we think we're starting to see a bit of a turn there. And it's somewhat akin to the market dynamics that we saw play out in the early part of 2009. This isn't to suggest that this is necessarily going to be something that plays out this week or even this month, but in our mind, this is something that's a very positive sign that we're starting to see.
So in your view, people with existing rate reset preferred shares, despite how difficult it's been so far, are advised to maintain exposure. It's not a good idea to sell now. We're starting to see some green shoots for potential recovery, and if these themes continue to play out, we think we could see a recovery in the preferred share market.
Yeah, I think that's sort of a very good summary of how we see the market at this point, Robin, yes.
Great. Thank you very much, Mikhail. I'll go through a quick summary for anybody that might have joined late, and then we'll wrap up the call. So the bottom line for today's call is that government bonds have evolved into a return of capital vehicle, not a return on capital. Relative yields on corporate bonds have become much more attractive, and investors have noticed, and we've started to see more participation in that sector. High yield bonds in particular look attractive to us, as do investment grade bonds in the energy space and in subordinated bank debt. The preferred share market has been extremely challenged over the last year, as ultra low interest rates have taken a toll along with the widening credit spreads. However, we believe it is best to maintain exposure, as valuations are currently at extreme levels, and this remains one of the only asset classes that individual investors have access to that has leverage to higher interest rates. So with that, we're going to finish the call. Thank you very much for calling in today. If you have any questions that weren't addressed in the call, please feel free to reach out to us directly. Have a good day. Thank you very much.